Welcome to Conversations in World History. So we're going to do something new here today. Mostly on this podcast, we hear from professors of world history, or sometimes journalists or artists who work in the field of world history. On occasion, we've heard from teachers, high school teachers. And now for the first time, we're going to hear from students. So I received a wonderful grant from my institution, Scarsdale High School, to support this podcast. And they had the idea of putting student work on the Conversations in World History podcast. And I said, oh, I can't believe I never thought of that. It fits so squarely into what I believe in education, which is about making student work authentic and real. Well, I am delighted that I have a number of my students and I received permission to have them share audio recordings where they describe their semester-long research projects. Students can do really great work in research when they are motivated, when they choose their own topics, and when they have the time and support to engage in that work. So they have spent about 6 months working on 6 to 10 page research papers about a topic in question of their choice, and you'll hear them discuss that here. They reached out to college professors, many of whom responded with suggestions for research, and I think you'll find what they chose to look at and what they came out learning from that process to be really interesting and thought-provoking, just like I did. So here they are, and enjoy.
Hi, my name is Harry. I did a research paper on the Jews in Shanghai. My question was, why and how did Shanghai save the Jews? And my thesis was that Shanghai played a crucial role and saving Jewish refugees before and during World War II by providing them with a safe haven and demonstrating remarkable humanitarian efforts. I chose this topic because my mom is Chinese and my dad is Jewish, so it's a bit of both worlds in my life. Something I learned about this that I found really interesting was that Japan was actually really fair towards Jews. They did not treat them how their allies, the Germans, did. And they were actually very towards for equality among people and no discrimination. For example, after World War I and the Treaty of Versailles, Japan actually pushed for an amendment that would basically mean that every country would have to provide equal rights and equality and no discrimination for people of different races. But it was eventually shot down by Australia and other countries, including the U.S. That also surprised me a lot. And yeah, I think that it was just, this whole research paper was just really interesting for me to learn about the history, I guess, of the world, and kind of a history that's not really focused on that much, about a country that's now today viewed on as kind of not a very good country in terms of relationships with the U.S. and overall. So yeah.
My name is Kenneth, and my history paper was about American involvement during the Vietnam War. Specifically, my question asked, what were the impacts of the American soldiers harming unarmed civilians during the Vietnam War, and how did they undermine the war effort for the Americans? And my response to that was, the repeated war crimes against unarmed Vietnamese civilians committed by American soldiers pushed more civilians to the communist side, as well as causing internal turmoil within the military, which resulted in serious damage to the American war effort. And this ultimately played a role to the loss during the war. I chose this topic because the Vietnam War is a major event in the modern history of America, and it has a huge impact on the mental health of many veterans today. However, I haven't had an opportunity to fully study it in school yet, so I knew I wanted to study about the Vietnam War. I also chose the war crimes aspects of it because the war crimes are now a bitter legacy of the U.S. military. So I wanted to learn more about what exactly happened during the Vietnam War, as well as how they impact our performance during wars we fight in. It's important to understand this because we continue to intervene in global conflicts and we still commit war crimes. So it's important to study and learn from our first major defeat. And part of it was because of the war crimes we selfishly committed. Although I was surprised that like the war crimes were actually not the largest cause of our loss, because there were many other military battles and other of those types of logistics that were ultimately bigger causes to our. However, it's still something that should not be overlooked in our history.
My name is Maddie, and my thesis is, the Taliban's rule in Afghanistan has been marked by egregious violations of women's human rights, such as restrictions on education, employment, and freedom of movement. Despite widespread condemnation from the international community, the Taliban has continued to enforce these oppressive policies, causing immense harm to the women of Afghanistan. The question that I was answering was, how are Afghan women's human rights being violated under the Taliban, and why is the international community not stopping it? This topic was always one of interest for me, hence the reason why I chose it. I also found it fascinating that since the Taliban is currently ruling Afghanistan today, decrees and regulations would become both harsher and more intense, and therefore change throughout my process of research.
Hi, I'm Sophie, and my research paper is on the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So my research question is, was the magnitude of death and destruction caused by the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs justified because they led to the immediate end of World War II? So my thesis is, the decision to use the atomic bombs on its civilian targets was based on unreliable estimates and assumptions about the Japanese never surrendering. The bombings were unnecessary and unjustified because of the long-term devastation they caused. I chose to do this topic because, although we talk a lot about World War II in history class over the years, we never really talk about what ultimately led to the end of them, and I thought it would be interesting to learn more about it. So something that I learned a lot about while researching this was about the effects after the bombs. I didn't realize how many people died after the bombs from cancers, leukemia, and radiation poisoning. So I thought it was sad but very interesting to learn about how after, like, years from the bombings, people were still dying and suffering because of it.
Hello, and my name is Luca, and my research topic was the Croatian War of Independence. My research question was, what do we learn about Yugoslavia from the Croatian War of Independence, and should it be taught in school? My thesis was, the Croatian War of Independence provides valuable insights into the complex historical and political dynamics of Yugoslavia. It highlights the inter-ethnic tensions, nationalist movements, and economic disparities that ultimately led to the Yugoslavia's dissolution. As such, it is important to include this conflict in school curricula to help students gain a more nuanced understanding of Yugoslavia's history and its lasting impact on the region. You may be wondering why I chose this topic, and the reason why I chose it was because my whole dad's side of the family were all born and grew up in Croatia, but when my dad was born, it was obviously Yugoslavia. So I wanted to learn more about the topic because I really haven't had the chance of knowing the Croatia's history as a whole. My dad didn't fight in the war, even though it was in 1991, but my grandfather did, which obviously changed their family's dynamic.
My name is Lex, and for my research paper, my topic was how anti-Semitism in the 15th through 19th centuries impacted the Holocaust. My thesis was that anti-Semitism throughout the 15th through 19th centuries included lies about the danger of the Jewish people, the destruction of Jewish spaces, and the forcing of Jewish people into ghettos, all of which were also seen during the Holocaust. Some things I learned while I was doing this research paper and through my research was all of the similarities in anti-Semitism, specifically through scapegoating, such as the blaming of Jews for the Black Plague in around the 15th century and earlier in Europe, and the blaming of Jews for the loss of World War I and the subsequent issues in Germany, as well as them being seen as the devil, as well as the separation of Jews from regular society, whether that be by them being forced into ghettos during the 15th and 16th centuries, as well as other periods of time in Europe and the rest of the world, shtetls and concentration camps and other ghettos and other types of camps that were used during World War II to contain the Jews.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and for my research paper, I studied how the Israel-Palestine conflict affected interfaith relationships in Israel and how regulations that were put in place affected these relationships. The Israel-Palestine conflict has had a direct impact on intermarriages and relationships, and due to societal pressures and regulations that have been put in place, these relationships are very difficult to maintain. I chose this topic because I knew I wanted to do something that had to do with Israel, and after researching a lot of different topics about Israel, I knew I wanted to do something that didn't necessarily have like a specific, I didn't want to do a specific event like the Holocaust, because I knew that that was something that was a common topic. I kind of wanted to think outside of the box a little bit. And I learned about a bunch of laws and just societal norms and pressures in Israel that really make it difficult to sustain these relationships and for them to be successful, and that the majority of the time, they're really only successful if you move away or keep your relationship a secret. And that honestly surprised me how unaccepting people were all over Israel, because how like racism really played a big role in it. And overall, I'm really happy with my topic. I think I learned a lot, and it was definitely super interesting to learn about. There was never a time where I really got bored with it. I was always finding new information, and it was just a super, super interesting topic.
Hi, my name is Paige, and my question is, what are the similarities between the art thefts of the Benin Bronzes and Jewish artwork, and what are the similarities of the repatriation of these art pieces? I chose to do this topic because I wanted to learn more about stolen artwork after watching the movie Woman in Gold, which focused on the portrait of Adele Bloch Bauer. I also wanted to compare stolen artwork in world history. I compared the theft of these artworks between the Benin Bronzes and the Jewish artwork by using this thesis. In comparison, imperial powers invaded Benin City and Vienna, and they used their status to steal sacred artworks through the dehumanization of the people they saw as inferior, and a continued military force and mistreatment that led to more stolen artwork. In both art thefts, the Nazis and the British both had a larger power over the people they were stealing the artwork from, and they used that power to steal more artwork. After learning about the repatriation of the Benin Bronzes and the portrait of Adele Bloch Bauer, I compared them through this thesis. In comparison, the repatriation of the portrait of Adele Bloch Bauer and the Benin Bronzes are both publicized, and as a result of that, the owners of the artworks have felt pressure and colonial guilt to return the pieces to the rightful owner. I learned that there is more awareness of like repatriation, and that is why it is like people are like museums are returning a larger return of these stolen artworks. But repatriation on its own cannot excuse the mistreatment of Jews and Africans, but it is a step towards healing the pain caused by imperial powers in the 19th and 20th centuries.
My name is Nadine McKenna, and the question I chose for this research project was, how successful was the Meiji Restoration for Japan? Through the Meiji Restoration, Japan not only made significant technological advancements in transportation, military arms, and ways of communication, but also became an acknowledged world power through its war victories, making the revolution one of the most successful in history. I knew nothing about this topic before I started researching it, and the reason why I chose it in the first place was because someone suggested the Meiji Restoration to me, and I found it interesting. But I soon found that the more I researched, the more I found myself invested in the story of Japan and its reforms. Japan was originally in isolation from the outside world for 200 years. Then, when one day the US comes with some warships, they basically force open Japan to open foreign trade, ending that period of isolation. When the new emperor comes into power, Japan is threatened by Western imperialization, so huge changes are made to almost every part of Japan in their government, military, economic system, and even their culture. And I was really surprised by just how much changed for Japan in such a short length of time, since the Meiji Restoration period lasted less than 50 years, but by the end of it, Japan was on the same level as the other Western powers. Because they changed so much in such a little amount of time, it really felt like they came out of nowhere, because most other countries were really surprised when Japan won victories against not only China, but also Russia. And it became the first time that an Asian country had defeated a Western power. Ultimately, I'm really glad I picked this topic because it was an extremely interesting story of, like, incredible change in a really short amount of time.
Hello, my name is Zoe, and my historical question was, how significantly have the protocols of the Elders of Zion been in shaping the way Jews have been viewed from 1905 to today? To answer, I came to the conclusion that the people who use the protocols as a basis for their beliefs, at least those who do so knowing the invalidity of the protocols, are those who are already deeply anti-Semitic and need to justify their hatred, meaning that the protocols are only now used to exacerbate already existing anti-Semitism, rather than create anti-Semitism in new people. This wasn't always my thesis, though. At first, I was a little more pessimistic, and I planned for my thesis to state that the protocols have largely and continue to largely diminish the reputation of Jews all around the world. And although this may have been true when they were first published, this is no longer the case, because they were so widely and publicly debunked. I was surprised at this realization, but it was a good surprise, because it led me to a slightly more optimistic outlook, that this tool of anti-Semitism is effectively useless in swaying the mind of a more rational, unbiased person today. Apart from this, I learned several interesting things about the protocols, that they were forged from a French revolutionist named Maurice Joly, that they were inspired by previous conspiracies, such as the conspiracies surrounding the Jews and the Freemasonry, and that they were used and distributed by the Nazis during the Holocaust, but were actually sued for such use and lost that case.
Well, special thanks to my students for their hard work on this project, for putting in these voice recordings, to their families for the permission to use them, to the Scarsdale High School administration for providing the opportunity to, and the idea of using student work in this Conversations in World History podcast, and for supporting this endeavor, as well as the overall intellectual and academic freedom to allow students and teachers to do really interesting, authentic, and engaging work. So thank you.